Preacher.
Good evening.
What's up, man?
Nothing much, man. How are you, man?
You know, I just had a bowl of Reese's Cup cereal. As a black man who sits in this house eating Reese's Cup cereal, excuse me, I couldn't be better. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm great. Well, I will admit, I thought I was going to take a Jeff Hardy-like bump off the ladder cleaning my gutters on Monday. But, you know, I didn't do the job for the ladder, so I'm great.
I'm proud of you because if anyone's ever seen you, you're a fairly large guy. Not in a bad sense. Like, you're, you know, so you falling is comical, but it's not. You know, I would ask, are you okay? And then laugh. Because it would just be funny to see. Especially because you have dreads. I just think anybody with dreads falling is just funny. Because the dreads go one way and your body goes another way. That's funny to me.
Sometimes.
All right, so we've got some wrestling to discuss. There's a lot
We do.
That's happened over the past 72 hours. NXT TakeOver, WrestleMania, Raw, SmackDown. I'm glad that we decided to record tonight. Because it's post all of that. So, Dante, I'm going to throw it to you for this illustrious introduction.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, the lay people of the leg drop, the congregants of the camel clutch.
I see what you're doing there. I see.
Welcome to the Preachers and Paul Pinfalls podcast.
Preachers and Paul. Who's Paul?
Paul was the great apostle of the New Testament who wrote 13 epistles.
If Paul was a professional wrestler, what would his finishing move be?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to go real old school. Bret Hart used to do this. I think because Paul physically was person, I can see Paul doing the playing possum, like he's out, and then reach up and roll you up.
I can see that. All right. Yeah. I think he would do like the the stab to the eye because he got blind on Damascus Road, and he would call the move the Damascus Blind Eye. That's funny.
He can do like the Roddy Piper iPod.
Yeah. That's what it would be. All right, man. So segment one, I love it how you are so meticulous and methodical, and you really, really help us with. You're good. So if we had to define the roles of everybody on the show, everybody meaning you and I, you do the preparation, and I do the post. I do cutting up and everything. And yeah. I think that when we bring it all together, it's good. I think this is really good. So, segment one, taking the text. Is that me first?
Yes. So you let us know what's going on outside of the ring.
Well, I don't know if this is newsworthy for people, but I saw it and I thought it was interesting. You know, and if anyone who has been listening to this podcast for the past two episodes know I haven't been. An infatuation with Randy Orton, that's true, but also with a female superstar, Sasha Banks. I have the hugest crush on Sasha Banks. I don't know if it's the purple hair or if it's that she's the boss. I don't know, but she was supposed to be on Wendy Williams, and this story is interesting to me for two reasons. I really like Sasha Banks, and I have this huge disdain for Wendy Williams. I do not like her at all. I don't know why. What'd you say?
Neither should you.
If I had to choose and Wendy Williams was in the ocean and they said, hey, you have the life raft, Desmond. You've got the lifesaver. Save her. I would not throw it. I would motion like I was about to throw it and then like, nah, psych. Like, I wouldn't. I just don't know why I don't like her. But Sasha Banks was supposed to be on the show and WWE has come out with several statements, and she canceled like hours before the show. she canceled. She just called and said she cannot come for personal reasons. Then going deeper than that, and Sasha Banks posted her response onto Twitter as to why she wasn't going to be on the show. She would say that I hope that there'll be opportunities in the future for me to come back. Wendy Williams and her people said that she would never come back. WWE retweeted her statement saying that personal reasons she wasn't there. I want to know why she wasn't there. And this is my thought. I don't know if this is the reason why. Was it because when originally she was scheduled, she was tag team champion? But because of the weekend, she didn't have the championship. Did she like feel kind of pissed off that she didn't have the belt anymore? And there are some rumors out there that she and Bayley have been putting out cryptic messages that, you know, they have a distaste and they're upset with the WWE. And, you know, everybody's talking departure now because of AEW. But I don't know. Wanted to hear your thoughts. Do you think that's the case? She was kind of tee off about not having a belt and she just decided, you know, personal reason, I can't come in.
So she doesn't go to Wendy Williams because she's not WWE Women's Tag
That's
Champion.
My thought.
I have no idea.
She said personal reasons.
I have no idea.
And it,
I will say...
Go ahead.
I would say on a more intimate slash personal note, I believe Sasha Banks' brother has special needs.
Okay.
So that could be it.
She said family issues. She did say personal and family issues.
So, you know...
Here's the quote.
I mean, I guess...
Here's the quote. Due to personal reasons, I had to pull out of my appearance today on at Wendy Williams. Sorry to everyone who was looking forward to it. Hopefully, the opportunity will be there again later. Hashtag, if you only knew. So, yeah, maybe.
I will say, if it was about the championships and her not being excited with the booking, and just FYI, as we kind of go back through the card, I just want to go on record and say I called the Iconics winning that match.
You did. That's how you did.
Now they're the only real tag team in the women's division. So, but if she was in her feelings, I think she would have canceled before hours.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Before the
that
show.
Makes sense. Yeah. That makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. Maybe I'm just digging for something.
What else you got out there?
I'm just digging for something that's not there.
Because it's Sasha Banks.
Did you see the text message I sent you?
The text.
It was an article. It was a video in embedded in an article. So outside of the ring, many African Americans.
I was gonna say the Shad Gaspar Montel Vontavious Porter text. Yes.
That you use their whole names. Yeah. That text. Black people who are wrestling fans, who are not wrestling fans, you know, we're happy for Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston was on Sway in the Morning. Sway is a major hip-hop figure who hosts a morning radio show that typically has people from the culture come on, talk about their endeavors. Kofi Kingston was on the show this past week speaking about him possibly becoming the first full-born, blooded African American-born WWE champion.
Can I interject something real quick?
Knock yourself out.
I just want to say for the record, first of all, if The Rock listens to this podcast, first of all, I would be floored if The Rock listens to this podcast.
I mean, if we both have a huge man crush on The Rock, I think that we would both be floored.
But and The Rock in a tweet actually sort of admitted this as well. We're not in any way, shape, or form demeaning The Rock. But the truth is, when The Rock was in WWE, he was touted as the first third generation superstar. And it was always linked to his Samoan heritage.
That's true.
And number two, another interesting factoid, his dad, Rocky Johnson, not American, Canadian.
Did not know that.
And the truth is, for whatever it's worth, really The Rock's blackness was displayed in, is only displayed in full once a year in his Black History.
Yeah,
but it's not. But it's not a slight on him.
No,
when you look at Kofi Kingston, number one, you know he's a dreaded brother of mine because I do have dreadlocks.
You do,
and he's darker skinned, and not only that, Kofi legit is first generation American because he is the son. And if you listen to him speak, you can kind of hear faintly his African accent. He is the son of West African Ghanaian immigrants. His parents are from Ghana, West Africa.
He's fully African born.
Absolutely.
So yeah, a lot that has kind of permeated through mainstream culture, that fact about Kofi. And the text I sent you had Shad, who we remember from Shad and the tag team. Who was the tag team? It was Crime Time. But who was his
partner? Are you ready for Crime? JTG?
JTG, yeah. So Shad Gaspar and MVP were together in what looked like a club. And now we'll probably get into this. I watched WrestleMania at your house, as has become our tradition. This is the third year doing it. No, second. Third.
Second.
Yeah. As long as this one was, it felt like 3 years. You teared up a little bit.
Which is
understandable. I didn't. And it was a big moment for me. I didn't feel it, you know, in that moment. But watching Shad and MVP tear up, I started to tear up a little bit. And it was really cool, man, to see guys who were not in that industry anymore, but just have such an admiration and respect for what was accomplished. Because to be honest, MVP could have easily done that. You know, that could have been him some years ago, had he stayed, you know, for whatever reason. Shad, not so much, but still, you know, to see guys not hating or having that crab in the barrel mentality that so many Black people have towards one another, it made me feel good. That was a poignant moment for me. And then culture, I think that this move really helped put WWE into the limelight of some other people who, outside of it being a Black thing, you know, they wouldn't have had their attention on WWE and on Kofi. You know, no longer is he just the kid's favorite, the jumping Kofi, but he's legitimate now. And I think that this move really legitimizes him as a primetime player, as a main eventer, which he always has been. But I think he can start bringing the money in, you know, because now people are starting to watch him because he made history. So those are my takes outside of the ring, man.
Okay. Well, let me set the context kind of for what we're going to be talking about today. And Pasadena said most of it, but I want to give a hot take.
Sorry.
Primarily because, and we're going to talk about this probably throughout this podcast, WrestleMania was long.
It was so long.
According to now, I watched the last two matches the next day because Pastor Dez and I both tapped out before the end watching it live.
I couldn't.
And I had been watching since the pre-show,
yeah,
which was 2 hours long. So, but according to the kind of paired edited version of WrestleMania that was on demand the next day on the network, it was 5.5 hours. If you had a 2 hour pre-show to that, that's 7.5 hours. Now, if you watched everything live, you're talking roughly, I want to say, 8 hours of wrestling. It was long. But I thought about something. So WrestleMania is called the Showcase of the Immortals, right?
Mm-hmm.
WrestleMania is also known as, you hear the term, it's the Super Bowl of sports entertainment.
That is right. That's accurate.
Well, I don't know how big of a football guy you are.
I'm a pretty big football guy. Yeah, I'm a pretty big football guy.
But what characteristic do you find in a Super Bowl? How many teams play in the Super Bowl?
Two.
Specifically, however you want to spin it, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get the podcast side eye from any disgruntled Saints fans, but it is usually the two best teams that play in the Super Bowl, which is why WrestleMania is WrestleMania is not the Super Bowl of sports entertainment.
I see where you're going.
It's not the Super Bowl of sports entertainment. It's the All-Star Game of sports entertainment. And not just any All-Star Game. It's the Major League Baseball All-Star Game of sports entertainment. Because there's one unique characteristic to Major League Baseball All-Star weekend that you don't see in the NFL or NBA. In Major League Baseball, every team sends at least one player to the All-Star Game. And when you look at WrestleMania, they try to put everyone on the card. So I thought about something. Because here's the thing. In the same breath, and I'm not contradicting myself, I promise. This was a fantastic WrestleMania. It wasn't overbooked. It was paced well. But it was so long.
It was.
There were, in my opinion, three matches that did not have to be on this card, primarily because, you gotta understand, the length of time I've been watching wrestling, the first WrestleMania I remember, if you go back, and please go out of your way to look in the archive and listen to our WrestleMania preview spectacular when I gave my fantastic dream WrestleMania card. My main event was Hogan Andre. But what made Hogan Andre so great was the story. And there were so many matches so thin on storyline, they didn't have to be on WrestleMania. And there's a continuum WWE's used before to put matches on SmackDown or Raw before or after WrestleMania and put them in the continuum where usually you'll hear the term by a commentator, this is a WrestleMania quality match. Mm-hmm. I love Samoa Joe and Rey Mysterio. That match did not have to be on WrestleMania. I like Bobby Lashley. And Pastor Des knows how I feel about face-painted wrestlers.
I do.
But Finn Balor, Bobby Lashley, did not have to be on that WrestleMania card. I didn't get to say this in the previous episode, but I thought the whole time, because they had been putting it out on social media, that the women's match that would have been great for the women's tag titles would have been at TakeOver New York, Boss Hug versus the Sky Pirates.
I can see that. I can definitely see that.
But the two Sky Pirates were in a four-way match against Shayna Baszler for the NXT Women's Championship. But even if they would have kept it as a four-way, that match didn't have to be on the WrestleMania card. They didn't have to trot out the. You could have had a nice little montage on the screen, and they had DX come out and do something for 2 or 3 minutes. One of the things, though, that really makes WrestleMania long, does every match have to have a video package before the match? If you think about the fact that you had 16 matches, if every match had a 5-minute montage promo package, right there, you're talking 80 minutes. You ain't even gotten to the wrestling yet. So, all that to say, listen, if this is WrestleMania going forward, that's fine. But don't tout it as the Super Bowl, because you really don't have your best players. You're trying to get everybody, and it's the All-Star Game. And if you want to tout it as wrestling's All-Star Weekend, I'm good with that. But don't call it the Super Bowl. Don't even call it the Showcase of the Immortals. Because I like Hawkins and Ryder, but they ain't immortals. So that's my hot take. What is your rebuttal, sir? Hello?
Okay, I'm sorry. I had some technical difficulties there. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
That was weird. I heard everything you said. So here's my rebuttal. The reason that I think it's called the Super Bowl of professional wrestling is because of the non-wrestling fans. You have to remember, we have to give people some kind of gauge to be able to understand how big of an event WrestleMania is. And for those who don't watch the product, I've said it at least three times over the weekend. A buddy of mine, a very good friend of mine, he wanted me and my family, like we go to his family's house and we kind of chill, our kids play with their kids, and we have like a good time together. He wanted us to come over Sunday, and I said, "Hey man, I can't. We can't." I spoke for my wife and my entire family. I said, "I can't because I will be watching WrestleMania." He was like, "WrestleMania?" I was like, "Yeah, that's like the Super Bowl of wrestling." And then he got it. Like, that's the one event that you look forward to. Because to be honest, WrestleMania is the end of the television season for WWE. And that next Raw is the beginning of that next season. So WrestleMania is like the end all of the entire year. So we're not calling it, at least I'm not referring to it as the WrestleMania of WWE of wrestling, because of it's not the very best. It's so many people, and all of the reasons you gave were great. But when I'm saying it, I say it from the point of we've waited for this moment, because if done right, everything that's happened from the first Raw after WrestleMania has supposedly led up to the following WrestleMania. You see what I'm saying? That's why I think that people refer to it as the showcase of the immortals, because you have people like what used to be Undertaker, but John Cena has assumed that role now as the iconic characters. You have the moments with Hulk Hogan and Stone Cold Steve Austin and Rock DJ Dwayne Johnson in the ring together, sharing a moment. You have these pivotal moments that you probably wouldn't see on a regular production of WWE, but the immortals are there. Where else will you see Ric Flair passing a sledgehammer to Triple H as he goes face to face with Batista? Unnecessary match, nonetheless. No, that's not what I'm talking about, though. I'm talking about the validity of it being an immortal showcase. That's what WrestleMania is about. From the first WrestleMania, Dante, from Mr. T to was El John was at one WrestleMania, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
This is the showcase of the immortals, not just those of the WWE, but we're talking Floyd Money Mayweather. We're talking Mike Tyson, Iron Mike Tyson. We're talking Liza Minnelli. We're talking the immortals of society, of culture, of media, coming for this one day to celebrate.
I'm gonna rebut your rebuttal. The reason it used to be called the Super Bowl of professional wrestling is because it was. And I'm gonna give you one specific WrestleMania that embodied that. And I rewatched it a couple weeks ago, and it's one of my personal favorites. Go back and watch WrestleMania 13. And if you don't, if you if, for all of you out there that may not be big, huge wrestling nerds like I am, if you don't know the moment of WrestleMania 13, WrestleMania 13 was the double heel turn and the rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin. But as I watched it, I noticed something.
What you
That
notice?
WrestleMania, was 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But every match on that card was fantastic. But let me say something in between. Because you said something that kind of helps make my argument.
Oh, okay.
You use the word moments. And I think, and this is why I will call it Sports Entertainment's All-Star Game, because WrestleMania has evolved into this gala event that produces moments. I mean, all the way, so the opening match of the pre-show was WWE's best kept secret, in my opinion, Buddy Murphy against the premier athlete, Tony Nese. Tony Nese is from Long Island. Of course, he wins the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. He gets his moment in his hometown. The Revival wrestle Hawkins and Ryder. both kids from New York. So, of course, they win. It's a moment. Samoa Joe, God bless Rey Mysterio. He said he's hurt, but I'm going to get you through this match. Joe, match was like 55 minutes, which I noticed they mentioned on SmackDown. But I don't want to spend too much time on this. But the point is, it's about moment. Joe got his moment because he was U.S. champion, his first championship title in WWE, his first WrestleMania with a championship in WWE. So he gets his moment. So I get it. But it's still not the Super Bowl of sports entertainment. I want to talk about, as we kind of look through this, talk about some returns. There were four, now that I think about it, big returns at Mania. We saw the Doctor of Thugonomics. And I'm going to be honest, I popped.
I know
you did. John Cena. So I popped on the inside.
Yeah, because you didn't do while we were sitting there.
I did. I was like, oh, because I was like, really? But I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. So let's talk about the two WrestleMania returns. And it was the in-ring return of one of my crushes, the Glamazon Beth Phoenix. So I guess first question, Dr. Thugonomics, best use of John Cena?
I'm going to say her yes. Two reasons. Because I think that John Cena was at his best when he was the Doctor of Thugonomics. To me, I think that, to me, because it was a gimmick that, you know, for whatever reason, it works. You know, because you're talking to a guy who I hate it when people misappropriate our culture and like stuff that belongs to African Americans, to be honest. Like I hate it when it's done in a cheesy fashion, but whenever I looked at John Cena, I was reminded of like Marky Mark Wahlberg, and it's like, it was okay. And then like John Cena, he's actually funnier to me when he's rapping. Like he's great on the mic. John Cena, if you're talking the Mount Rushmore of those with mic skills, John Cena may not be on that top five for me, but he's definitely on that top like six. Okay. If I had to build two extra heads for my Mount Rushmore, John Cena would be on there. John Cena's mic skills are great, impeccable. But when he's rapping, he's actually very good and he's very funny. And he's funny because he's able to reflect, turn the table on himself, and kind of poke fun at him. He's always done that. And he did that on WrestleMania night. He talked about his films. He talked about everything. And I think that's what resonated so good with the crowd. Now, here's the second reason why I think it was a good move for John Cena. There was a time, Dante, and you don't know this, but there was a time I stopped watching the product. This was right on the emergence of Randy Orton, John Cena, Batista. This was like when Evolution was really getting formed. This was when WWE was on TNN, I believe.
Yes.
And I forgot why I stopped, but something made me mad and I just stopped watching the product. Or it could have been the moment I got like super saved and I was like, I'm gonna stop everything carnal. That could have been that too. I don't remember what it was, but during the Thugonomic reign of John Cena, I really missed a lot of it because I wasn't watching the product. And so when I came back around, John Cena had been so far removed from that that shtick, that gimmick, that I kind of missed it. So whenever I get to see those flashbacks or when I watch matches like him against JBL, Kurt Angle, when I get to see that, it's cool to me. You know, it's I appreciate it. And it makes me appreciate John Cena, the talent, even more. So it's a big up for me. Thumbs up. I liked it.
Okay. So Beth Phoenix made her in-ring return. And I'll just say very briefly, that woman was amazing. The match wasn't great. It was okay. But she was fantastic. I mean, for someone who hadn't wrestled a match in a while, she looked like a million bucks. I mean, the top rope glam slam towards the finish. I mean, and she didn't look like she got blown up either. So, you know, I don't know how long Beth's run's gonna be with the with the Divas of Doom, but I thought it was she looked good.
Is that what they're going by, the Divas of Doom?
Well, so
did you give
them it's so name? Funny you say that. I did not give them that name. So when they were together, and I remember they had the feud with Lay Cool, and I remember them calling themselves Pin Up Strong. And their gimmick was they would do their hair, and when they weren't wrestling, they would dress like 40s and 50s pinup models. But apparently, everything I've read, they were known at that time when they were a pair, because they really weren't a tag team. They were known as the Divas of Doom. I don't even remember that. I remember them as Pinup Strong. But I guess I'm going with the internet because, of course, you know, Abraham Lincoln says everything on the internet's true. Mm-hmm. So we had two post-WrestleMania returns. We had The Undertaker. And we had the returning Sami Zayn. Thoughts?
I like Sami Zayn's haircut. I said this the night of WrestleMania. I don't know if you remember it. I said, I hate wrestlers with long hair. So, in contrast, I love wrestlers. Like, when Dean came back with his hair, like, cut, I loved it. Sami, I freaking love it. In the beard, like, Sami's a great competitor. I like Sami. Sami can do no wrong, to be quite honest. I think it was okay. Undertaker, I'm not as enthused as I would have been. You know, it's Taker. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't react the same way. And I know the place popped. You know, you're gonna be excited when you hear "dum." You're gonna get excited, but now it's like, how long will this dog keep coming to the yard? You know, like that. You know, you got that one family dog that is super old, and like he don't do tricks no more. You know, he barely barks. He just kind of gets around. Taker's like that dog. You know, it's like, eh. You know, we don't want to take him out because he's been around so long. But just wait until he decides just to stop breathing. And that's what I feel like. I feel like everything's a struggle. Like, he has to try so hard. And granted, he's in the best shape now because I follow him on Instagram. He's in the best shape now than he's been in the past 5-6 years. But still, you know, Taker's 60 plus, man.
No, he's 54.
No, he's 50. Okay, well, the man has a body like a 7-year-old. So it's just, you know.
I think the first thing that jumped out at me when I saw Undertaker was, man, he looks as good as, and you said 5 or 6. I think he looked on Monday night. And here's the thing, that was more than likely a one-off. I haven't seen or read anything where he signed a longer term deal. But he looked as good as he's looked to me in almost a decade. Hey, here's one for you. It's a one-off. He looks that good. He's going to AEW.
No, somebody said that. Somebody said it was going to be Taker versus Elias at Saudi Arabia. because of that one moment.
That might happen. Sami Zayn's promo on Monday Night Raw was so good. And here's the thing. When he started talking, I thought he was like gonna just kind of exit and say that he quit. And I thought that for one simple reason. Because, so of course, as you know, I am pretty much a wrestling nerd. And so just very quick, my wrestling nerd history. There was a time in my life that I did subscribe to Wrestling Magazine. And on the back, you could send off and get basically rent VHS tapes from New Japan and All Japan. And I did that. That is what is known as tape trading. But
that's not telling your age at all. Not at all.
That's fine. But here's the thing. I thought he was going to quit because I was listening to the Masked Man Show podcast. And he and David Shoemaker mentioned that a couple days before WrestleMania, the El Generico Twitter account became active again. Now, for those of you that don't know, and I'm going to completely kayfabe this, allegedly, there are people that believe that Sami Zayn was El Generico on the independents, specifically in Ring of Honor. So I was thinking he's going to quit and go away, and then El Generico is going to magically show up and look eerily similar to Sami Zayn. But he didn't do that, which is fine because he cut a fantastic promo. And let me say one more thing about Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn has the greatest dad bod of anyone.
Oh, man, he does. He really does.
Because he doesn't have, like, the Finn Balor, I haven't eaten carbs in the 21st century physique. But somehow Sami Zayn somewhere in there has a six pack. It's phenomenal.
It's somewhere in there.
So real quick, we did have two retirements. Dave Bautista through his Instagram announced his official retirement from Sports Entertainment.
I'm ready to talk about that.
And of course, I did call Baron Corbin for the win also last week.
You did.
Because you go out looking at the lights, brother. If you can, first Dave, and then Kurt.
Okay.
How you felt about them?
I've been thinking about this Dave thing for a while. And, you know, I've never been a huge Dave Bautista fan. I liked him. In the ring. He's had some great feuds. He's a great performer. I never thought he was the best wrestler. Not the greatest worker, but, you know, great character. And, you know, he had a body. Vince loves big. Damn, I love his body. Vince loves big guys. Look at him. He's world champion. He loves big guys. Bautista, to me, was at his best in Evolution and on the heel of coming off of Evolution, going on that run where he, you know, feuded with the likes of Triple H. And he was also at his best with me when he had that feud with Rey Mysterio, which was great. Bautista is always only good in a great story. If it's just Bautista wrestling, like, because he's so domineering, right? So follow me. Because Bautista's so domineering and so intimidating in his look, he needs to have a story behind, because he's not going to give you a stellar, like, performance unless he's in the ring with a Taker, with a Shawn, with a Ray, right? So the story has to go with him. And I, you know, his career was okay. It wasn't the greatest. Like, I don't think anybody cried when they heard Bautista was retiring. I think many of us thought he was already retired, you know?
But it wasn't official.
It wasn't official. Bautista's had some great moments. I loved it every time he quit. And I like Bautista. I like him. I'm not like, hey, but that, are we going to talk about the match later or should I do that now?
Let's talk about the match later.
Okay. I'm going to say this one thing. No, I'm not. I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not. I'm going to say this. I'm glad he retired. And let me.
Okay.
If I would be sadder if Bautista would have really taken the second or third reunion of Evolution serious. Like, to WWE has missed some key moments, and as it relates to factions in the past. When NWO came, they missed a huge moment. And then also with the re-evolution of Evolution, when they feuded against the Shield, like, that was the smartest booking decision you could make. But I feel that it was not capitalized on, and I think that, to me, a lot of it had to do with, and I could be wrong, but I think a lot of it had to do with Bautista behind the scenes. There, and I'll say that.
Okay. You know what? I'm looking at the rundown. Talk about the match.
Okay.
And then talk about Kurt.
Oh, going into this match, it was something I wasn't excited to see because, again, Bautista and Triple H are, Triple H is 49, I believe. Bautista's 50 or 51, so he's up there. And that those aren't old ages at all, but that's an old age in wrestling years, okay? This match did exactly what I thought it was going to do. It saw them. Triple H is hurt, so we can act like he's not. You know, he had that shoulder injury, and it wasn't devastating, but he's still not moving like he was able to some years ago. And that's A, because of age, and two, because of that, I believe, that injury. So I didn't expect much from Triple H, nor did he give us that much. It was a typical veteran spot match. They got their spots in, and that's all it was about. Batista has not been in a... At least Hunter, Paul, Levesque has been wrestling actively for some time now. Batista hasn't. And you could tell Batista was slow. Batista has never been a choreographed wrestler anyway. The other night at WrestleMania, really, like, you were reminded, like, oh, my God. Like, he moves like a dinosaur inside of the ring.
Hey, look, brother, Triple H wasn't exactly Grease Lightning in that match.
Oh, no, not at all. But if you had to compare the two, Trips was a little better then, you know what I'm saying? Because he's been in there. He's been kind of used to it. Batista, man, I think it was an okay match. I love the story about pulling the nose ring out. Like, those spots were cool. I get it. You know, you were mad at Batista for beating up Ric Flair. I get it. If you're going to have Ric Flair come out, why not Randy? You know, like, not just because I like Randy, but that was like evolution. Give us that moment, WWE. Don't give us Batista, Triple H, and Ric Flair. Like, that was not fair.
But Randy had nothing to do with the story.
He didn't. But if you're going to involve three members of Evolution, you figure out a way. Hell, have him come and just RKO with Ric Flair for no reason. I don't care what it was, but give us something. The match was subpar. It was a risk. I was afraid. I was literally afraid somebody was going to break their back because you just didn't know. You didn't know.
So tell us, what about Kurt?
A waste. I mean, listen.
No, not the match. This was his last match.
No, I mean, so Kurt Angle should have retired years ago. Like, he should have not been in the ring when he filled in for Roman Reigns for the Shield. He should have not been in the ring. He should have not been in the ring wrestling Rey Mysterio, wrestling Samoa Joe, wrestling Baron Corbin. Because it's sad to look at, you know? He can't. And it's almost like, Kurt, what are you doing? What are you here for? Because you can't turn your neck. Your neck looks so enlarged. It just kind of meant, like, I get what they're trying to do, though, Dante. Like, I get it. You're really adding heat on the Baron Corbin, and I appreciate that. I like that. You're almost trying to make this like what you did with Roman Reigns when he put Taker down, okay? Reigns came out the Monday after. This is my yard now. Oh, y'all supposed to add so much heat to Roman Reigns. It didn't, but I got what they were trying to do. I think they're trying to do that same thing with Baron, but Kurt Angle has already been put down. Like, you're fighting a wounded puppy. You're fighting somebody who's handicapped. You know, it didn't have the feeling to me like a Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair did. It didn't have the same feeling to me as an Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels. It didn't have that same feeling. And I don't know if it's because Kurt stayed, even outside of WWE, Kurt wrestled way past his prime. And gosh, even if you compare Ric Flair in his last match to Kurt Angle in his last match, Rick was still able to perform in the ring. Kurt's not.
Man, Rick, you know, there's a saying in geometry, and I don't teach math people. I'm an English teacher by trade, but there's an exception to every rule. Man, when it comes to that, I believe Cowboy Bob Orton said in Ric Flair's DVD, Ric Flair found a fountain of youth and he kept it for himself.
Every time he got in the ring, he looked good. That cannot be said for Kurt Angle on last night. And to me, I just got pissed. You know what? I just got pissed off. Like, even looking at Raw and how they're still trying to involve him and make some kind of storyline, I'm like, dude, Kurt, give it. I'm not even mad at Kurt Angle. I'm just really mad at WWE. I'm mad at creative for not realizing. I don't know who to be mad at. I'm just mad.
Well, I'll say this. I've never liked Batista. I've never been a fan. I like one Dave Bautista match, and that was his WrestleMania main event against The Undertaker. I didn't think very much of his matches against Triple H. And Triple H did everything in his power to get him over, and I still didn't think he was very good. I think the one thing that left the biggest, worst taste in my mouth about Dave was when he came back the first time during his Bautista run, and he had a match against Alberto Del Rio, and he looked awful.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought much of David as a performer. He was not a very good promo guy. He had some decent moments, like when he was in the wheelchair and Bret Hart fired him. I mean, that was decent. And quite frankly, I felt like, and so ironic with the storyline, him saying that Triple H held him down, and which I'm like, but you are 6-time heavyweight champion. How did Triple H hold you down? That storyline being it, because quite frankly, I thought that he quit because he got passed up by John Cena and Edge and was in his feelings about it. I thought the match was okay. The purpose of the match, I kind of had a feeling that this was going to be Batista's last match, but I really felt like, especially when Dave wanted Triple H to put his career on the line, I kind of had a feeling that, okay, Triple H wants to get this win, you know, kind of in the continuum before Dave retires. But yeah, I've never been, as you can see, I've never been a huge Dave Bautista fan. And I felt like Dave got his opportunity because of his size, because of his look.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
But yeah. I never thought it was because of his ability, because I never thought he had very much.
No, not at all.
I mean, Bautista was corner shoulders to the stomach, power slam, spear, power bomb. That's about it. But he was a guy that looked better with smaller guys. I would say that may be the one redeeming quality of Bautista. Like when he wrestled Eddie, when he wrestled Ray, because they would fly around and bump for him, that made him look good. But I was never a Bautista fan. Kurt Angle, in my opinion, and by all means, senior hate twist to add past the DDP, Kurt Angle, in my opinion, is the best mat wrestler in the history of the business. I don't think there's anyone better as a mat wrestler.
I don't take that.
Shawn Michaels is the greatest professional wrestler of all time. Yeah. I look at categories. I don't think there's anybody as a chain wrestler better than Kurt. Few people know this. TNA was pretty much on the verge of going under near the time they signed Kurt. Kurt's work in TNA saved that company.
I agree.
Kurt, Samoa Joe, and AJ Styles, their work from 2004 to 2006 saved that company. And he was fantastic in TNA. He was great with AJ. His matches, I mean, and this may be one of the old school deep cuts of the week on our Facebook page. By all means, if you're on Facebook, you can search for us at Passions and Pinfalls, or you can find us at facebook.com/Passions and Pinfalls. You're going to have an old school deep cut of the week. Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle is going to make that list. His matches with Samoa Joe and TNA were otherworldly. And they were some of the better matches in pro wrestling during that time. Now, a complete opposite, I've always been a huge Kurt Angle fan. Did his demons affect his career? Absolutely they did. Because the truth is, he probably would have never left WWE if he would not have had to fight those issues. But I think it became a blessing in disguise because he did great work in TNA. His last really good match was, in my opinion, it was, I want to say, I don't remember the independent promotion, but it was in New York against Cody Rhodes. I think that was his last really good match. I think he did the right thing. Kurt, although not familiar with the business before he got into it, he was trained old school, so kind of brought up that kind of last crop of old school guys. So it doesn't surprise me that he put Baron Corbin over, because what you got from Baron is what you want from Baron. Baron Corbin, along with Drew McIntyre, are the two most bullable heels on Monday Night Raw. And people can say whatever they want about kayfabe. You still need guys that you want to dislike. And I think people genuinely dislike Baron Corbin. And that's going to play well for him. In addition, perfect segue, that Kurt Angle segment on Raw brought us a debut. And we had two debuts. One kind of a debut of Jace. But I don't know if this is your first time seeing Lars Sullivan, but just seeing him, what did you think about the freak from the Rocky Mountains, Lars Sullivan?
I've been hearing about Lars Sullivan for a while. Some of the talk that he, because he's from NXT, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I've seen him. You know the crazy thing? Me and Lars Sullivan are the same age. So, look at my life accomplishments. look at my size. But he's another big guy. I think that there was a statement that Triple H made that in regards to Vince McMahon, that Vince would never, you know, no matter where he goes in the company, no matter what he releases, what power he gives to people, he's never going to be fully out of the creative control, like that creative department. And you can see that here. You know, Triple H is working valiantly to bring up guys from the independent circuit, raising up people, guys and girls from the NXT mark, you know, who are smaller. You look at a Finn Balor, you look at a Sami Zayn, and you look at Lars. Lars, to me, screams Vince McMahon, you know, and so does a Drew McIntyre, you know. Not to take anything away from Drew. I know that's your man. You would have children by Drew McIntyre if you could. To take anything away from him. But he's a big guy. Braun Strowman's a big guy. Lars Sullivan's a big guy. Brock Lesnar. Like, these are big guys. And he's another big guy that they need in the pool of small guys. Because if you notice, Dante, WWE, their main talent is getting smaller.
They're getting smaller. Absolutely.
And smaller. And I think that, you know, here's the reason why a Lars Sullivan was such a major, and even in NXT, there's the smaller guys, Velveteen Dream, you know, Aleister Black, Ricochet. We can go down the list. There's not that many big guys
Velveteen,
anymore.
Velveteen isn't big as far as size, but he's tall.
He's tall. So when I say big, I mean if you look like you eat whole pigs and you lift logs just as a part of your daily regimen. Like, you know, nobody is that, it's not the land of the giants anymore. And, you know, to me, Lars is another big guy. You know, he's another big guy. Yeah. And so we'll see what he does. He's another big guy. So not too
much. So I like Lars when I saw him on NXT. My biggest concern about Lars was actually initially my concern about Baron Corbin. But they let Baron Corbin marinate in NXT longer than they did Lars Sullivan. And my concern is about Lars Sullivan is, can he work? Because the last we saw Lars Sullivan, and I was actually at NXT TakeOver Chicago when he wrestled Aleister Black in the main event, and Aleister Black completely whiffed that black mask kick. And Lars tried to sell it. But the one thing that I remember, man, Lars was blown up before the first 10 minutes of that match. So he's big, he's got a look, and he can talk. He has a bit of a list, but he actually cuts a decent promo. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting moving forward.
Cody had a list too, so.
Yes.
A very bad one, by the way.
So debut of Jace is Lacey Evans. Because the only thing we've really seen from Lacey
Talk about Lacey.
Lacey's – look, I don't know if Lacey wears a Garmin or an Apple Watch or if she's got a Samsung watch, but if she's been counting her steps, man, for the last month or so, she's been getting them steps in.
She's been getting those steps in.
But finally, And I'll be honest, and maybe this was just kind of the middle finger to the marks. My thought was Lacey was going to come in last at the Women's Battle Royal and win it.
Mm-hmm.
But we got a cute little surprise. You know, we got my girl Carmella. She won, which is all good. But so she gets into it with Becky Two Belts. Here's the thing. Vince McMahon loves Lacey Evans. Apparently, a lot of the people backstage are very high on Lacey Evans. And they think the work, she's got a great look. She can work. I've kind of noticed these two avenues in NXT. And I'll go all the way back. So I first started watching NXT when, oh my gosh, Sami Zayn beat Neville for the NXT championship. Mm-hmm. I kind of watched it sparingly. Like I remember a little bit of Big E's NXT championship run. I remember when Seth Rollins won the first NXT championship. I remember watching that tournament. But it seems as if you go kind of like two roads in NXT. If you got a look and you kind of got a natural charisma, which Lacey Evans has both. You work a little bit on NXT, they hide you, then they bring you up.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done that with three people I've known. First, they did it with Roman Reigns. So Roman goes all the way back to FCW before NXT. And he worked a little bit in FCW.
He did.
He didn't work. He worked a couple matches on NXT, but didn't really work NXT until the Shield. So they did the Shield gimmick on NXT, then brought it up to the main roster. Same with the Wyatts. Lacey worked a little bit NXT. She had a brief feud with Dakota Kai, I believe, and then that was kind of it. And then now they brought her up, and then of course same thing with Lars Sullivan. So I think they're kind of missing the boat with Lacey. I think you play up the ex-military, specifically ex-Marine mom who's in pro wrestling. She's a Southern Belle. That's so glow to me. But you know what? Look, they haven't called me to work creative yet. So just general question. You know what? Before I give a general question, as excited as I was for Kofi's win, can I nitpick Kofi's match from WrestleMania?
Oh, most definitely. It needs to be nitpicked. This is like somebody when they want to say Black Panther was not that good of a film. Like it wasn't the greatest film. Or you can't because, you know, it's black. They won an Oscar.
First of all, Black Panther was amazeballs.
So people are saying, no, Dante, stop. People have said to me, and I've disagreed and argued with them, it was the greatest Marvel movie. It's the greatest film of all time. It's the greatest superhero movie. No, it's not. It was a good movie. It was great for what it was, but it's not. You're not going to put it up there as the greatest. No, it wasn't. The acting wasn't that good. It was okay. It was great visuals. It was great for what it was, for what it represented.
So you're wrong.
Okay, that's my opinion.
this is not my black bias. Although I will agree with you on one respect, I don't think it was the greatest Marvel movie. The first was my favorite and still is my favorite, and that's the first Iron Man.
Oh yeah, same here. Most definitely, I agree.
Yeah, that's my favorite. And but Black Panther second.
To me, Black Panther's like third or fourth. To me.
It's tied for second because I really enjoyed the first Avengers movie as well.
Yeah, and Civil War was extremely well. Like, it was extremely good.
Because I'm going to be honest. I didn't like Civil War.
Oh, really?
It was okay.
I liked it because of the plot points. Like, to me, a good film is all about the plot, character development, and storyline. You didn't see too much. The only character that was really developed in Black Panther was Michael B. Jordan's character. It was Killmonger. Other than that, there was no real development of these other characters. And so if it was a movie about Killmonger, okay, great. But it was Black Panther.
They developed Killmonger and T'Challa.
T'Challa had already been developed in Civil War. So they really, Dante eased up on T'Challa. And they really poured heavily.
I disagree. T'Challa was not developed in Civil War. T'Challa was introduced so he could fit in the continuum Civil War.
Okay. I'll give you that.
But I will say this, and this is the reason I have not liked several of the later X-Men movies. I do think they sacrificed a little bit of story for visual effects in Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
But in another regard, I think that had to happen because you had to really show Wakanda as this technologically and intellectually advanced place, which it was. But the one thing I really wasn't a huge fan of from Kofi's match was the celebration. When I saw that table set up and Daniel Bryan put his championship belt around it, I said to myself, they're letting everybody know Kofi's going to win this match. I said, it's a championship belt under that match, under that cloth. So seeing that visual for me made the match seem a bit contrived. Mm-hmm. Like you knew what was going to happen. Now, I thought they worked the match well. The one thing they did at this WrestleMania was I thought they gave the matches that had the big stories, they gave them time. Mm-hmm. So they gave Kofi and Daniel Bryan time. Look, Triple H is COO in charge of creative. Of course he getting time. Mm-hmm. And a hot rod, apparently. And they gave the ladies time. But I felt like the match was a little.
It wasn't Kofi's best.
I know it's a work. You know, it's not like it was. You know, when I was a teenager, trying to figure out what is and isn't real. I remember having a conversation with my sister saying, "Yeah, you know, Kevin Nash don't like Hulk Hogan in real life. Who knew?" But the goal still is to suspend reality. The goal is still, and even if the reality is, who's gonna win? Having that table with that cloth, and that's clearly a championship belt under that cloth, you knew Kofi was going to win. So that was my only issue. So perfect segue. Other than the Kofi win, any big time WrestleMania moments for you?
That's a great question. Do you have any?
Other than the Kofi win,
I do.
Surprisingly, okay, give yours.
At the risk of sounding like anti-black, I was so happy for Kofi, right? But that's a given. You know, I'm extremely couldn't be happier. Very happy for Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder. Remember when Zack Ryder won the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania some years ago?
And they lost it the day
before. Lost it the day after.
Yeah.
I was devastated because I really like Zack Ryder, as I think a lot of the Zack Nation does, right? Zack Ryder's a great worker, great performer. He's just a great character. He's a worker, man. And I think he deserves more than what he was getting, what he is getting in WWE. Same for Curt Hawkins. And you and I have had this conversation about Curt. Like, he likes the position that he's in. But I just feel somebody who's just great on the mic, somebody who's great in the ring, and he's just like aesthetically good to look at. Like Kurt looks like what a professional wrestler should look like in 2018.
You're talking about Zach too,
but Kurt has like that attainable body. You know what I mean? Like he's not, he looks like a very well fit, put together professional wrestler. And I just, he's made everything work too. Like anything you put him in, he makes it work. So I was happy to see those guys not only win the tag team championships, but to keep them the night after. So that was a take home move for me. I was happy about that.
Listen, I had one issue with Hawkins and Ryder.
What's that?
They should have came out as the Major Brothers. They should have found the old Edge Heads Rated R gear. They came out as the Major Brothers.
I like the way they came out.
So that's my issue with a lot of the quote unquote tag teams that you get in the women's division. You're a tag team. Wear the same gear.
See, I'm not with the same gear. I've always been a proponent. This isn't the 80s. This isn't the Rockers. You know, I think that you should be able to differentiate yourself. Like
name one great tag team that they didn't wear the same gear.
Give me a second. DX.
Who?
Billy Gunn, Road Dogg. Shawn Michaels and Triple H. Daniel Bryan and Kane. X-Pac and Kane. Undertaker and Kane. I think you have two categories of tag teams. You have the traditionalists, which are the Legion of Dooms, the Heart Foundation, the Usos, right? But then you also have those tag teams who have individual runs too, but they're also a tag team. Stone Cold and Triple H were probably a great tag team. Had they gone on to do it longer,
the two-man power trip were not a tag team.
They were.
They were two singles wrestlers.
Triple H was
the Intercontinental Champion. But and Stone Cold was WWE champion.
When I say tag team, I mean in-ring chemistry. They tag together. You're such an old school fan.
Tag team that wore different gear that was a real tag team that was the Dream Team. Since you're talking about I'm old school, the Dream Team was Brutus the Barber, the Hall of Famer Brutus the Barber Beefcake, and Hall of Famer Greg the Hammer Valentine. That's it.
I've named some good teams. Because
none of those guys.
The Hardy Boys, Edge and Christian. I knew it would come to me. Rated RKO was a good tag team.
Rated RKO. Those were two singles wrestlers.
They were a tag team.
Didn't have anything else to do. Oh my god! I'm gonna have this argument with you tonight. let's move on.
Don't disregard what I said about the Hardys. You went past that. They were a tag team. Edge and Christian were a tag team. They did not wear the same colors, the same scheme. They didn't. Jeff would come out in no shirt.
Edge and Christian wore the same gear.
Yeah, no, they didn't.
First of all, when they were the Brood, they wore the same gear.
That they were a part of a bigger faction, though, Dante. They were a part of a bigger faction.
The Brew was three guys.
I'm not going to have
Edge and Christian.
I'm not going to have this conversation. I'm not going to have this conversation.
The Hardy, they wear the baggy JNCO pants and like the crushed velvet tight shirt with the arm, the little arm. I don't even know what they're called.
But when you compare them to the Legion of Doom, they didn't have matching spikes on. It was different. They had their own personality in their attire. Yet they were uniform because they were a tag team.
They were coordinated. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, coordination is different from understanding. Okay, whatever. I'm not going to. Keep it going.
So we talked about debuts. We talked about returns. We talked about retirements. As we bring this thing to a close, how does WWE avoid what always seems to be the inevitable post-WrestleMania lull? Slash, my next question, which is kind of an answer to that question. So next week is Superstar Shakeup. What would you like to see from the Shakeup?
I would like to see a fuller, more in-depth rivalry. Like, I want to see better feuds. I think that, and I'm going to be honest, I'm surprised that WWE is still doing the Shakeup. I thought they weren't going to do it. So I'm surprised about that. But since we're doing it, I want to see, like, there's so much potential in... I want to ask you a first question, too. I think that the WWE has to be careful of, A, calling people up that don't get used, and underusing the people they already have on the main roster. Because we have to look at the grander landscape. They have a pretty deep roster. Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. Because if we're talking about champions, you know, going to all three platforms, that's a very, very big roster. Mm-hmm. It's a very big roster.
Oh, they have an embarrassment of riches.
You said what?
So they have an embarrassment of riches.
They do. They do. Right? And I want to see them. Absolutely. I want to see them take care of that. And you do that by fostering great feuds and great storylines. Like, and you have so many people. Like, it's Bobby Roode to me is one of the best performers in the WWE right now. But the average person, and I know him from TNA, right? He was one of the people I actually watched because I enjoyed. The average person won't know that, who only knows him from being on WWE. Use him.
Look, I said when Bobby Roode wrestled James Storm in the main event of Bound for Glory, I don't remember what year it was. I believe I tweeted that I thought that Bobby Roode could main event WrestleMania.
He can.
And I still believe it. I still believe
that. I'm with it. I'm with it, man. He can. So, like, the Bobby Roodes out there, don't let them, please, don't let them get lost in the shuffle. Develop lasting feuds. If you're going to have a Lars Sullivan come up, don't put him against somebody that doesn't make sense. I need to see the dominance of Lars Sullivan solidified, and you make it a good feud. If you want to put John Cena in that, I'm okay with that, because John Cena putting him over makes sense. You have Baron Corbin. If you want to position him as a dominant heel in the company, do that, whether it be on SmackDown or Raw. If you're going to have Bobby Lashley, you know, Brock is gone now for however long this hiatus is going to be. Let's utilize the talent we have to tell some great stories. Dante, there are so many stories. So many stories. Great wrestling. And this is why I'm a fan. If somebody asks me, why do you enjoy professional wrestling? Yes, I know it's fake. Yes, I know sometimes it's kayfabe. Sometimes the real things can happen. But the reason I love it is because of the stories. What we saw from WrestleMania in the main event, and we didn't talk about that main event, but one thing I do want to take from that is that it was a great story. The story of Ronda Rousey, Becky Lynch, was a great story in itself. Adding Charlotte, I think, added another dynamic to that. Whatever the performance looked like, whatever that in-ring fight was, you know, call it what it may, it was a great story. WWE needs to get back to... let me just say this. WWE needs to get back to telling great storylines. Please, have these storylines go over from Raw to SmackDown. SmackDown to NXT. Merge these storylines together. And I'm hoping, because WWE is getting a new show, I think, in October on Fox. And from what Triple H had to say, this will kind of like tie everything together. It's going to be like a behind-the-scenes show, and it's going to tie everything together. Like, man, have these shows bleed it? Like, I want to be able to tune into SmackDown and see some of the residue of Raw end up on SmackDown. Like, that would be so dope, because the roster's so big. And it's so big. And there's so many storylines. Be Marvel. Hey, Vince, Paul, Mike, everybody in the back. Be Marvel. You know, make everything tie in together. That's it. I'm done.
Okay. So,
Be Marvel.
I want to close with talking about the main event. But you brought something that I won't put you on the spot. You mentioned stories. With this shakeup and potentially who could go where, is there a rivalry or a story specifically that you want to see?
Yes.
Because I have
one. There's three. What? There's three, actually.
Randy Orton. And
Randy Orton versus everybody. So there's three things I want to happen. This first one isn't really it's a storyline, but not really in ring. I want to see Shane really step more into this heel role with the Authority. I don't like the name of the Authority. I really want Stephanie, Shane to really lean into that more. They don't even have to be at every show. They don't have to be on TV all the time, but just know that they are presence. We've lost that Authority dominance. That storyline has kind of fizzled away. And I really want Paul, Triple H, to step into that Vince McMahon role. I really need that to happen. And so I need with the superstar shakeup, I need for that to happen. Because I need those three people to be the gods of WWE and be those extreme heels that they are by nature. You hear me? I need that to happen. Because one of the reasons the Attitude Era was so good is because of the back and forth, the antagonist, protagonist, Vince McMahon and Stone Cold. Vince McMahon making the corporation. Bringing out Pat Briscoe bringing out Pat Riley and Briscoe. I forgot Briscoe's first name.
Did you just call him Pat Riley?
I did. That's the Miami Heat. Patterson and Jerry Briscoe. Like that storyline, and even when they tried to develop that with Seth, you know, and Mercury and the other guy. So I'm not gonna harp on that. I want to see that happen. I really want to see Samoa Joe positioned as a dominant A player because he's a force to be reckoned with by his look alone. Whenever Samoa comes to the ring, he looks like he's about to do damage. And so I don't care who they put Samoa Joe in a feud with. It needs to be a good feud, a lasting feud with somebody. They play with it with him and Randy Orton because that would have been a great feud, but they did not maximize or really push that. I want to see Samoa Joe come over to Raw and I want him to take over. Dante, I want Samoa Joe to take over. I'm saying that like Vince McMahon is listening to this podcast. Samoa Joe needs to take, because he's that guy. Like, he is one of the most dominant on look alone. He looks dominant. He looks intimidating. He looks scary. He needs to be a dominant player on Raw.
I'm going to tell you how good Samoa Joe is. Samoa Joe is so good that he jobs so often and everybody still thinks he's a badass. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. That's how great Joe is. So.
And, you know, Randy and somebody.
There's one feud I want to see. And I don't care how they do it. I want to see a Seth Rollins, AJ Styles feud. I don't care if they make them both baby faces. I don't care if you turn Seth heel. I don't care if you try to turn AJ heel. I want to see Seth Rollins and AJ Styles wrestle each other professionally in a ring for World Wrestling Entertainment. That'd be one. Second, they kind of hinted at it Tuesday when apparently Joe can lift, Brian can lift semi trucks, but can't lift Samoa Joe. and I like the fact that because Samoa Joe's not going to back down, but I also think Braun Strowman on SmackDown would really give him that fresh coat of paint that he needs. Mm-hmm. And I also think that Roman on SmackDown would also be interesting because now the Shield Reunion Tour is over. You can split Seth and Roman if you wanted to do that. Now, here's the thing. you mentioned you wanted kind of Raw to bleed in through to SmackDown. So we've seen this intermingling post WrestleMania. I have a bit of a conspiracy theory. And that is, you're going to continue. This is, you're seeing the beginning of the end of the brand extension because SmackDown is going to Fox in October. And there's no way I'm paying what Fox paid and I can't, and Roman Reigns is not going to be on my television because he's exclusive to Raw. I don't see that happen.
I don't either.
Just mine. So let's end with the main event. And I'll start because I'm going to be brief. Number one,
you know I'm long.
Congrats
with
to Becky.
You know I'm long with it. So.
Congrats to Becky Two Belts. The controversy about Ronda's shoulders and it being a botch. If I can channel my inner Vince Russo, bro, it's a work, bro. On either side, whether it's a shoot or whether it's a botch, whenever Ronda comes back, the only thing Ronda needs to say is, Becky, my shoulder was up and you didn't pin
me. Yeah. They're going to do it.
Story told. In addition, I went back and looked at it, and the shoulder that the ref could not see was the one that was up. The other one was down. So the ref's out of position. So whether it was real or kayfabe, you can work that any way you want. I thought the match was good. Ironically enough, it was good, but I thought that was Ronda's worst match since she's been in WWE. And maybe because she set the bar so high. But I don't. But I did not think that was one of her better matches. It was okay. I like Charlotte pulling a Ric Flair coming out of the helicopter. Ric Flair wrestled Dusty Rhodes, I believe, at a Great American Bash at Shea Stadium, and he arrived in a helicopter. So I like that nod to her dad. But they both did. I mean, the match was fine. I think one of the things that hurt the match was that, like, the last couple weeks, the story kind of cooled off. But it's I'm very interested to see what they do moving forward with Becky having two belts and not unifying the women's championship.
Okay. Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
I think it was great, man. Not as a great match, but you know, I think that was. You say you think it was Ronda's, not her best match. I agree. Now, I don't think it was Charlotte's best match either. I don't think it was Becky's best match either. Becky looked a little stiff to me. Again, I think what saved that match was everything leading up to it. I think it was the story. I think the fact that Becky had her nose broke, you know, I think the fact that Ronda is coming, this UFC character coming into the WWE world, who legitimately can whip Charlotte and Becky like fisticuffs, like she can really beat them up. I think it was a great story that they told. I'm happy that Becky got the two belts. I am displeased though, because Dante, as you know, there was one thing I wanted to see at the end of WrestleMania. I thought I was going to see. I really, really, really thought I would see the four horsewomen standing in the middle of that ring. And not only did I not see it because Becky got both belts, but Sasha and Bayley lost. You know, I'm going to be honest, that sucked the life out of me for that match. Because that's what I was really banking on. I think a lot of people were. It just would have been a cool moment. It would have been a really cool moment. And it would have, I think, led us down a rabbit hole of great storytelling.
Let me close with a bit of a hot take. I would say first, the additional championship and the match did not enhance the match.
No, it didn't.
And maybe the match, dare I say it, didn't need Charlotte Flair as much as maybe they thought. I don't know. I think Becky and Ronda would have been just fine.
I do too. I wanted that. You know, I think we've talked about this. I was upset when they said they were adding Charlotte, but it is what it is. It's over 48 hours, 72 hours removed. Let's move forward to see what they do with next year's, with this year's WrestleMania or next year's WrestleMania. It'll be next year, 2020. That's why.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you got to watch TakeOver New York or not.
I have not.
Okay, so that's your homework for next week. I want to break down and TakeOver New York.
Velveteen Dream.
And let me say this.
Velveteen Dream.
About that specifically, that match was phenomenal.
Velveteen Dream.
By the way, that match was great.
I love Velveteen Dream. I love everything about
and Patrick Clark, aka the Velveteen Dream, showed that he could sell for a guy. But and as much as I didn't like the way a lot of matches weren't able to breathe on WrestleMania, I am not one of those. I'm not one of those. That thinks that WrestleMania should be booked like NXT TakeOver. Because I don't want the one thing, and you've mentioned a little bit earlier about like Lars being a monster. As we're doing this podcast, I've been watching NXT UK, and I like UK, but NXT UK has one huge problem, and that is every guy looks the same.
They do, but here's the reason why though. In the UK, typically their guys aren't extremely big, nor are they extremely small. They're like they're average size, you know. They look like a Starbucks.
But I'll talk about that in more detail next week. But I said that to say I don't want WWE to suffer from sameness. I like the fact that NXT is distinct, unique, and different from Raw and SmackDown, which means takeover shows are different from the quote-unquote main roster pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we draw this thing to a close, brother, tell everybody where they can find you.
All right, man. If you want to follow me for all things wrestling, go to my Twitter handle. At Desmond Alicea, DezimonAlicea. And then if you just want to...
Ain't he great?
Huh?
I said, ain't he great?
I am. You know, if you just want to look at some other stuff I do, same name, Facebook and Instagram. Dante, where can they find you, Pastor?
You can find me on the Twitter machine, at PastorDDP. You can find us... on email, reach out to us if you have any questions. I'm somewhat of a wrestling nerd. I'm no Jim Ross or Jim Cornette, but as I read more, I'm becoming a little bit more of a wrestling historian. But find us on preachersandpinfalls@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook. The Facebook page is developing, including the weekly deep cut old school match of the week, facebook.com/preachersandpinfalls. So this week's old school deep cut match of the week is a match from Mid-South Wrestling featuring the Nature Boy Ric Flair and Terry Taylor. And it is finishing school on wrestling psychology, boys and girls. You might want to check that out. As we draw to a close, shout out to the now Hall of Famer, SD Jones. And if all hearts and minds are clear, that's the benediction. And until next week, brothers and sisters of the Squared Circle, we'll see you then.
Wow.